Welcome to Focus, our morning talk program. I'm Jeff Bossert, in for Jim Meadows. On today's show, we look back at 50 years of history at the University of Illinois' Assembly Hall. Before we start the conversation, we're going back to March 2nd, 1963. We're hearing audio here of a newsreel produced by the university to celebrate the grand opening. Let's take a listen of this. I'll be back with you in just over a minute and a half.
There was no doubt, however, that the building was the main attraction for this event, as 39,317 people came from all directions to attend the Assembly Hall open house. The new hall was not completely finished, but public interest was so great that university officials decided to open its doors for a special preview season. Inside, heads craned upward for a breathtaking view of the hall and its modernistic features. The projection booth, the circular theater grid and its 158 mercury vapor lamps that illuminate the dome of the hall. A diversified program of entertainment was staged for the occasion. Featured performers included jazz trombonist J.J. Johnson, popular recording stars Les Paul and Mary Ford, but the major attraction of the day was the building itself. It captured the imagination of everyone there, including Assembly Hall Director Tom Parkinson.
The thing that makes it a multi-purpose building is that it can be used as an auditorium, as a theater, or as an arena, or as an exhibition hall. And we're in business in some of those areas today.
And we just heard a portion of a newsreel produced by the University of Illinois celebrating the grand opening of Assembly Hall in 1963. Today on Focus, News Gazette prep sports writer Fred Croner is joining us. He's the author of A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall. Co-authored by Melissa Merrily, the book commemorates the plans and construction of the facilities in the late 50s and early 60s and all the events that have gone on there in the past 50 years. Fred's joining us by phone. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Good to have you on the phone, and also joining us by phone because of the inclement weather today is Kevin Ulstad. He's served as director of Assembly Hall since 1997. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
We have other highlights in the past half century we'll share later in the show, but right now we want to talk a bit with our guests about the book and hear your questions and memories of favorite games, concerts, and other memories of Assembly Hall. Your calls are welcome, 333-9455 around the Champaign-Urbana area, or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. Fred, let's start with you. How much time went into planning this book? When did you decide we're at the 50th anniversary and we need to commemorate this and we have a lot of photos and people we can reach out to talk about it with?
Well, the work started, I mean, well over a year before I actually did any of the writing, just in terms of recognizing that the 50th anniversary was coming up and then kind of getting a list of people together to try to contact, to try to interview. And then during the school year a year ago, I got started on the project, did a lot of the work then. But then it was really last summer where everything just kind of came together. I really pulled everything together in terms of finalizing the interviews, doing all the writing, and then actually got it turned in last August 1st. I think I figured I spent something over 500 hours in terms of the writing, the research, and the interviews that went into it.
For those that maybe might be a student or have not that familiar with Illini history and Assembly Hall history, as we mentioned, it opened in 1963. We're just a little past the 50-year mark, and the U of I started discussing a fieldhouse athletic facility as far back as the 1940s here on the U of I campus, and it got to the point where we were one of the few Big Ten conference members without a fieldhouse. Can we talk about some of the initial discussions, Fred, and what went on in as far as trying to get something built that would house Illini basketball as well as some other events?
You know, as I did the research, that was one of the things that I really found surprising was the fact that there was talk back in the mid-40s, and there were some sites selected. One of them, as best as I can tell, was just north of Memorial Stadium where the ARC building is now. That was one of the original sites that they had talked about where they were going to put this, what they called multi-purpose facility, and then another one a ways east of where Huff Hall is. And, in fact, I think at one point there was a state appropriation that they could get going, but due to whatever snags and hassles that there were, they didn't get going, and then the appropriation was no longer available. So, even the building for the Assembly Hall, I think, started, it was December of 1957, when the Board of Trustees actually signed off, gave their seal of approval, and everything was a green light at that point. So you go from December of 57 all the way to March of 63 before the building actually opened. So even when they got the approval, there was still a long period of time before everything came to reality.
Well, some of the naysayers include the American Association of University Professors. They were upset that that a student fee should be going into a athletic facility rather than helping boost the salaries of U of I faculty.
Well, in fact, yes, there were editorials to that effect, especially up in the Chicago papers. I think the university took a hit up there. They were very much against that, very much opposed to that. But I think one of the things that worked in favor of the Assembly Hall was it wasn't just a building that was going to house, an athletic team or a couple of athletic teams. So this was a multi-purpose building that was going to be used for concerts, graduations, shows, conventions, as well as the basketball game. So I think that was one of the major selling points that it had going.
We're talking about Assembly Hall this morning in Fred Croner's book, A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall. We love your calls, just not only questions, but favorite memories of a particular, maybe it was an Illini game or a concert or other event you saw there. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We did have a comment already on Facebook. Cindy says that watching Illinois men's basketball with her dad in the late 60s and early 70s when their neighbor didn't use the tickets was one of her favorite memories at Assembly Hall. She says she can still hear Tom Trent, the announcer back then, introducing Nick Weatherspoon. She says she also remembers being proud that Rick Schmidt was from Royal. And love to hear from memories from anyone who's online. Maybe you could email in a question. Let's talk about, Fred, some of the construction involved and just how interesting the architecture is on this. I mean, you had a lot of people championing this, but Maxwell Abramowitz, he figured prominently on a lot of construction on the U of I campus, and the Assembly Hall was just such an interesting piece of architecture for the period.
Well, in interviews that I read from Abramowitz, who actually was a University of Illinois graduate, I think that's kind of an interesting thing, too, is he came back to his alma mater and not only did the Assembly Hall, but then later did Pranard as well. But he had said that what he envisioned in advance, he thought could turn out to be the best thing that he had ever done. And I think, in retrospect, I don't know if he felt that way, but I know he was very, very pleased with it. And one of the things that happened during the construction was early after they got going, there were some strikes, labor strikes, there was some bad weather, and that put some delays in there, some unforeseen delays. And then when it came time to pouring the foundation for the roof, that could only be done at a certain time. So they were actually ready to do that, but they had to delay that. And so that was one of the reasons why the completion took so long. One of the things I found very interesting was the seniors that graduated from U of I in 63, that included Dave Downey and Bill Small, when they were in high school and recruited, they were told that, if everything went according to plan, they would be the first group to play in there, and they would get to play in there at the start of their sophomore year, which back then, freshmen were not eligible to play. So it would have been, they would have had three full seasons in the Assembly Hall. Well, due to all the delays and everything, they got in there for their final two games of their senior season. And in truth, they weren't all that excited about it because they were fighting for a Big Ten title, and they weren't sure how much of a home court advantage it was going to be playing in a facility where they had one practice as opposed to Huff Gym, where the spectators are just right on top of you. So I think that was one of the points that I took out of it as well.
Well, one other thing comment that Downey had made in the book is they had a little trouble with shooting in the dome because they weren't used to that background.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's a wide open background that, at that time, that was very unusual. You were used to shooting in the gymnasiums where you had a solid wall behind, and it was easier, at that point to line things up. And I think you know, in this day and age now, there's so many facilities like the Assembly Hall where you have that open background. That is, you know, obviously much less of a factor. But at the time, this was kind of, you know, ahead of its time.
Let's work Kevin Yelstad in the conversation. You've been a director of Assembly Hall since 1997, so you're a coordinator of pulling in, what, more than 100 events each year. Is there anything that right now the facility the way it is, and I know there's been a student fee approved and other phases of new construction approved or rehabbing approved that is limited in terms of what you can bring in terms of other acts?
Well, yes, I've been here since, I guess, the fall of 97, and we do roughly, you know, we've hosted roughly about 500,000 people per year. And you touched upon a real issue there about the multi-purpose side of our building. And even back early days when the building first was thought of, and Tom did an excellent job, Tom Parkinson, of creating that special event atmosphere of having it more than just basketball. It's concerts, it's family shows, it's a little bit of everything. And that's been our focus from day one, and we continue to do that. Like I say, we're in the business of making memories, and we continue to, you know, the push those out on a yearly basis, whether it's great basketball or if it's concerts or family events. That's been our operating MOU for years now.
Maybe we talk a bit about what you'd like to see happen with some upgrades. I know the big thing that gets brought up as air conditioning, and ideally what you could might be able to offer in the summer with that amenity added.
Air conditioning would definitely be a big plus, whether if it's summer programming or just as we gear up. We really don't take a good strong look at bringing programming into the building until about mid-September because of the volatility of the weather. It can be really warm, really sticky in here in September, so right about the middle of September is when we start cranking up our schedule as far as bringing in other concerts and activities. And then come, you know, obviously when basketball season starts up and you get 15,000 people in here, even in October, it can be very warm. But then you look at the other side of it, come the spring, once we get into the April, May time period, although you're not going to think about it now with 8 inches of snow on the ground, but you know, come April, early May, it can get warm in here. So programming-wise, we basically shut down right about the beginning of May, right after graduation, and it can be very warm in here. But air conditioning is a huge aspect of this renovation we're talking about right now, and the options of doing some summer programming for, of course, the students and the community are a major part of any talks of renovation and where we're going with this.
We're talking about Assembly Hall this morning with Fred Croner of the News Gazette discussing his new book, A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall, and also Kevin Yelstad, director of Assembly Hall. Kevin, what do we have a exact timetable of when we want to see some of the improvements, not only perhaps air conditioning, but some upper-level restrooms and some of the other work that will be generated by student fee and this architectural firm?
Well, a quick snapshot of what we plan on doing with this major renovation that's coming aboard here soon. Plans are right now. We're just finished the schematic design phase and went through an excellent student fee referendum process. We had some student group that did a dynamic job of getting on campus and getting the vote out, and it passed without any issues at all just a little over a month ago. And that was one of the big phases to get accomplished within the whole financial package of the whole project. Moving forward now, we're going to be working over the summer with a D&D phase with the architect to get it fine-tuned to really what we're going to do with this major renovation. Because this is going to be big. I mean, we're using the approach that we're only going to do this once. We better do it right. The timetable on this is to start next March, a year from now, right after basketball season is over with, to basically take a look at once the basketball season is over with, to not have any spring programming and to start with the renovation at that point.
I'd love to hear your calls about Assembly Hall. 333-9455 or outside the Champaign-Urbana area, 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. If you have questions or comments about the facility or just a favorite memory of a game or something else you attended at Assembly Hall in the last 50 years. Fred, turn it back to you. We talked a bit about construction, and I think one of the most amusing parts in the early portion of the book was the student ballot for naming the facility in 1963. You had a lot of people that wanted to name them for certain at certain people. I guess the biggest push was in the wake of the assassination of President Kennedy.
Well, right. That came shortly, the Assembly Hall opened shortly after that, and that was one of the things, they had different student referendums at different times, and, there was support for Bob Zupke, who, of course, was a great coach, more of a football coach at the university, and then the John F. Kennedy Memorial Assembly Hall, and that was one of the ones. And, the interesting thing about the Assembly Hall title itself, that was given by Tom Parkinson. Just when they were starting the project, he said, because they needed to have a working title. And he wasn't thinking that he was necessarily naming the building at that point, but it was just something, he considered it an area where people were going to assemble for whatever the purpose might be. And so he just, as a working title, gave it the Assembly Hall. But I think what happened then over the course of 4 or 5 years, there was all this talk and publicity on the radio and the TV and the newspapers in terms of, building, and it was always talked to and referred to as the Assembly Hall, because that was the working title. And so I think so many people got used to that title that then when it did come time for it to finally open and there was the discussion, well, what do we call it? I think a lot of people just kind of took it for granted that, even if there was some other name, it was going to be called the Assembly Hall by so many of the people that were just used to that.
Some of the amusing material in this book, and by the way, there are a lot of just really terrific pictures of people who haven't been around for 50 years, like myself, just on the construction phase. But there was a whole chapter on settling on a name, and there was some write-in, humorous write-in suggestions, including the $20 raise in tuition building, Max's mistake, the mushroom, ping pong palace. I assume those were among the people maybe that were a little upset that they're throwing in, paying an additional student fee 50 years ago for this facility.
Well, and I think one of the other writings that kind of struck me as kind of strange, some people wanted to call it Huff Gym, and I don't know, what you were going to do, because the other Huff Gym wasn't going to be torn down, so what were you going to have, Huff Gym 1 and Huff Gym 2? So I don't know, but you're right. I mean, there were, when the ballots went out and they went out in the student newspaper, the Daily Illini, there was a spot for write-in. I think there were, I don't know, probably 18 or 20 different ones that got some votes besides the ones that were actually on the ballot.
Got another comment on Facebook. Alex says on Facebook that he remembers going to see lots of games in concert at the Assembly Hall starting in the 70s. When he was in school, the basketball teams were bad, but the Grateful Dead was great. His great favorite memories are of Eddie Johnson's shot to beat Magic Johnson's Michigan State team in 1979. Then 10 years later, covering the Flying Illini team for WIOL. He says he was also covering Illinois high school basketball for the Old Courier when it was announced there that there was no deal to save the paper, and wrote one of the final stories that appeared in the paper from the hall. A lot of different things covered there in that comment from Facebook. Thanks again for Alex for that writing in at that comment.
But you know what? When I was in school at the U of I, I worked part time at the Courier as well. In fact, I worked with Alex when he was there, so I go back a long ways with him. And he was one of the people that was there when I kind of got my start. So I've known Alex for a number of years.
Maybe since we brought up the Grateful Dead, we could reflect a bit on some of the performers who have been there. I was really impressed looking back at some of the concerts that have been there, and maybe we could even work our director Kevin back into the conversation. We've had some really interesting requests. I don't know how many since you've been director of Assembly Hall, but just some bizarre things that people want to have in their dressing room, waiting room, whatever. I guess the strangest one was Van Halen say, I can't remember how many M&Ms they wanted, but make sure you remove all the black ones. I guess it's a superstition going into any performance.
Yeah, the story on that, it's funny because, Van Halen was obviously a huge rock act. Came about in the late 70s. They really took the national attention, and then they did their first tour, the second tour kind of thing, late 70s, early 80s. And in that rider, I think it was green M&Ms. They didn't want any green M&Ms in their backstage dressing area. And every show will put out riders, and basically there's a production riders and a tech riders. There's basically different show riders to go off, but the hospitality riders, what you're making reference to. And a lot of times the bands will say, here's what we're looking for breakfast, here's what we're looking for lunch, and here's what we're looking for dinner. And when they're on the road, you are their temporary home away from home. So obviously our whole mentality and other venues are use the same mentality as well, is to make them feel at home, feel comfortable in your facility. So what Van Halen was doing is putting No Green M&Ms in the rider just to see if you would do it. And that's the story behind the Van Halen rider issue. It's not that they really cared one way or the other, and chances are they didn't even eat the M&Ms, but just to put it in their rider just to see if you would take care of their accommodation.
And Neil Young asked for a washer and dryer. How easy was that to hook up, I wonder?
Well, we have that backstage accommodation anyway, because when we were doing the ice shows or a long, long time ago when the basketball team was here and didn't have the practice facility across the street, the laundry facilities would be available for them to use as well after practices. So it's not uncommon, and specifically we still use them up until just probably 2 weeks ago for a Broadway production, because the Broadway shows obviously travel from facility to facility, city to city, and they need obviously some laundry facilities for their shows, for some of their wardrobe activities. So that's not uncommon at all, but the key aspect is what we do when we're producing the shows and promoting all these national touring shows is to make them feel at home as much as possible. We want them to feel, we want them to feel like they're in the backstage accommodations that we went through. That major renovation that happened back in 97, 98 was a $12 million backstage renovation, was all about the backstage experience. And what we heard from the show, from some of the talent, some of the production folks, is they were ecstatic. Some of those backstage accommodations of what we have now are better than some of the hotels they're staying in.
And the biggest crowd, I guess, still to date, though, was Elvis. Is that right? 1976. And I was only aware of this recently, and we immediately think, well, this was a matter of months before he passed away. But there were nearly 18,000 people, and I think the tickets sold out in, 6 hours?
That's the record right there, and I'm pretty sure that record will never be surpassed. The record attendance of 17,177. That is obviously putting him wall to wall in this facility. And the reason that will never be surpassed is back then. Take a step back. These days, if you go out and go to a show, a recent Miranda Lambert show had 10 trucks. That's 10. 53-footer trucks out there with sound and lights and gear and wardrobe and, all the other activities that go along with the show. Back in the mid-70s, they didn't have that many trucks on a show or on a tour, so the stage was not near as big. The production wasn't near as big as what they put on the road these days. So you could actually put more seats in the facility with a smaller production. That's a simple explanation of why that number will probably never be surpassed.
We have a caller on line one. Marlene in Urbana has a renovation question.
Yes, hi. I have a question about the renovation, and I'm really pleased that this is going through. I know this is kind of a minor aspect, but I'm a senior citizen, and I love going to the Assembly Hall, but I have a very hard time with the seats. They're low and uncomfortable for my back, and I was wondering if it's possible to do a special seating section, maybe charge more for the seats, that would be more amenable to senior citizens.
Great question. Thanks for bringing that one to our attention. As you might have guessed, since the building was built back in the 1963, we just gone through the 50th, basically we're on the 50th anniversary right now. The original seats that were put in the building are still here. We've gone through and made some changes to some of the seats as far as repairing them, but that is not one of the most comfortable seats. You're right. There's no question to that. And the renovation is going to handle all of that. All new seats are coming into the building. Basically, you're taking a good, strong look at the bowl itself. Lower A is going to change drastically, where we're going to get a bigger footprint on the floor. We're talking suites and clubs, and there'll be some fine accommodations when it comes to seating with that. But also in the B and C section, all of those are going to have all new seats put in. They're going to be a wider seat, of course, and better backs and better accommodations from the start. So, that will be addressed 100% when this renovation comes into play next year.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about Assembly Hall this morning. Fred Croner and his new book about the 50-year history of the facility. You can call in at 333-9455 or outside the Champaign-Urbana area, 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also send us your comments on Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. We're going to pause here for a short break, and we'll have some more memories of Assembly Hall. This is Focus.
ILL. I-L-L. Now we know we're home.
And welcome back to Focus. I'm Jeff Bossert. And today, to talk about Assembly Hall, we're chatting with Fred Croner, News Gazette prep sports writer, is the co-author of A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall. Also joining us by phone is Kevin Yulstead. He served as director of Assembly Hall the past 16 years. Welcome back. Good to have you both on the program. And I believe what we heard there was U.S. Senator Dick Durbin in the late 90s leading a whole big crowd rallying around the President Bill Clinton's appearance in January of 1998. We talked a lot about a little bit about the facility, and we've talked about concerts, and I thought this would be a nice segue, having heard that clip, to talk about the January 1998 appearance of the president speaking at Assembly Hall with Vice President Al Gore. I'm going to listen back to a short clip from Clinton's speech, but first, Fred, I wondered if you just want to talk about memories of that day. I mean, we had, what, 300-some media requests and just the only appearance by a sitting president here on the campus, at the Assembly Hall, that is.
Absolutely. And, I mean, beyond that, I mean, just, you know, Route 45 was lined with people. I mean, people came over that didn't have tickets and you know, weren't going to be in the building, but they wanted to be just part of the experience and, you know, whether it was seeing the motorcade go by or whatever. And so, you know, it was something I think touched a lot of people's lives, whether they were actually in there or not. People out at Willard Airport and like I say, just lining the path all the way up to the Assembly Hall.
Well, why don't we go ahead and hear this clip? This is President Bill Clinton, January 1998 at Assembly Hall. He began talking about how forward-thinking the legislators were who passed the Morrill Land Grant to provide funding for land-grant universities back in 1862.
Illinois and other land-grant colleges have literally led our way into the information age. And it all stemmed from something somebody did in 1862 that no one could have imagined would one day have led to all you see around. I think Lincoln would have liked the pep band. But he could not have imagined it.
That was, again, President then Bill Clinton talking to a huge crowd at Assembly Hall in January 1998. He wanted to talk about things like green energy, education, medical research, Social Security. And this was days after the Monica Lewinsky scandal had broke, so this may have had an influence on the media request, but nonetheless, just a huge event at Assembly Hall. Also wanted to point out that Air Force One got stuck in the mud as it tried to leave Willard Airport, and there's a shot of that incident in the book as well. Fred, do you want to talk any more about, I mean, you just, the photos in here, just the collection of photos are vast, from going back to the construction all the way to very recently, nice aerial views, and I assume the News Gazette had a large role in that.
Well, they did. And, you know, in my mind, I mean, I think that's one of the highlights of this book is just the fact that there are so many photos from, you know, whether you're talking about the construction phase or the entertainment or the, you know, the athletic endeavors or President Clinton, there's just so many pictures to reflect and I think kind of help capture the memory and, you know, maybe help people relive the memory of events they see or heard about or have heard their friends or parents talk about. I think that's one of the highlights for me is just being able to get so many of those pictures. Yeah, we got a lot from the News Gazette archives, but other people as well. I know Dick Foley had a number of pictures that, you know, he graciously allowed us to use as well. So that was just a fantastic opportunity, I think, for us.
Got a comment from Carol on Facebook, says she was going to see the ice capades. He says going to see the ice capades when she, it was her favorite memory of Assembly Hall. And I think that might bring up a question for Assembly Hall Director Kevin Yulstead. I mean, what are the most difficult events just to plan? I mean, putting on a sheet of ice, or I know that there was a rodeo of sorts in there some years ago. What are the hardest things to prepare for in terms of other concerts and events?
Well, a good question. Obviously, we're multi-purpose, multifunctional, so we can do just about anything in this building that is touring across the country. And some of the and our operations guys, you know, Dave and Tom love a challenge. They love a challenge. So I throw that out there because some of the interesting changeovers that we do really are quite fascinating. So we'll go from a basketball game, and we'll go if we go back about a year or so, we had like, I think it was 20 out of 30 days were tied up with events in the building. So we obviously went from changeover to changeover. And a lot of that obviously comes into overnight changeovers. Well, we'll have, you know, a crew of 15 guys or more working overnight to take the basketball floor up, to get the scoreboard down, to move in a show for the next day. And then a crew of 60 or 70 stagehands will be here to get that next show of 12 trucks loaded in. So it's quite fascinating to watch. We have some time-lapse video of that. But some of the interesting, I mean, we've got so many years of experience of making memories here at the Hall when it comes to bringing in shows and basketball games. But I think you touched upon a big one right there, Icecapades. Since we do not have the brine lines, the frozen capability in the floor itself to freeze the floor and then to allow, you know, it goes on in sheets, so you spray it on and then it freezes and you keep that going till you get about a good 3/4 inch or an inch thick ice to be able to do an ice show. Disney on Ice, Icecapades, Champions on Ice, we've done them all. That's probably one of the most difficult. It takes a good 2 days in advance bringing in portable tanks, and when I mean tanks, they'll bring in they'll roll out the surface, which has a frozen capability. Once you plug it in and get the compressors rolling, then it freezes, then you spray the application over the top of it to get to a, you know, 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch base. But that takes a good 2 days to get that to roll out. Other than that, we've got into, you know, a lot of overnight changeovers when it comes to the concerts. But some of the bigger shows like the Aerosmith or Janet Jackson were 15-truck shows. Those were monsters. I mean, those were $30,000, $35,000 stagehand bills. Those were that big of a production to come into the building. And a lot of that really is based upon that backstage renovation that we did in 98 to allow that 3-truck tunnel. In the past, we just had that single-truck tunnel up until 98. And a lot of the bigger shows were bypassing the market because they could not get the show in and then load it in, do the show, and then load the show out and get it down the road another 300, 350 miles away in time to be able to do a show. So that, you know, that's a huge credit. And that was a student referendum, again, back in the, you know, the late 90s that passed that renovation to allow us to be, you know, on a level playing field to be able to do those big shows.
And the you know, we talked a little bit about renovations. You mentioned been 97. I mean, the fan experience as far as attending, well, any event, I guess, including athletics or concerts, is a little bit different now in terms of like some work over the years. In terms of the seating and the way that you and this will definitely change in the next couple of years.
I'm sorry, I lost the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wondered about how renovations have gone in the past 50 years. I mean, in terms of what kind of view you had from different perspectives and what has gone on. You talked about some work in the late 90s. What about within the facility itself that the fan would notice over this time?
Yeah, that, I make reference to that backstage renovation, and it was all backstage. It had all new dressing rooms for the teams, new training room for the teams, hospitality, the 3-truck load and dock, roughly another 10,000 square foot for storage that we did not have any storage space back. That was all backstage. What we've done in the front of the house areas, we refer to it where the fans going to experience that, is, well, when the building was first built back in 63, there were no concession stands. You know, it's still kind of mind-blowing, you know, to think about that. When the building was first built, there were no permanent concession stands in the building. And that wasn't even a thought to have concessions sold in the facility, let alone take it into the arena. So later on, you know, a couple of years down the road, some portable stands were introduced, and you couldn't take the concessions item into the facility or into the main bowl area, so it was all stuck outside. So we've gone through many different versions of concession stands because obviously it's a big part of the fan experience coming in. The new plastic or the rubber-based floor was installed in the early 90s. That was a major part of fan experience. And, of course, just, you know, updating, keeping it clean, repair projects, that kind of thing, into the restrooms. But nothing major like what we had experienced in the late 90s had we gone through for a front of house renovation. So that's why it's so due now to go through this major renovation starting next year.
We'd love to hear.
I think there's another key point I would like to touch on too, and this is one of the reasons why the assembly hall was so well accepted at the very beginning and was able to be used for so many different purposes. Tom Parkinson had a vision, and of course a lot of people know he was just a huge circus fan, and in the design plans that Max Abramowitz did, there were elevators in there. However, there was no ramp or anything in there. And Max was a person, from all the stories and reports I heard, did not like to make any changes. When he had something designed, that was the way it was going to be, and he essentially told the people, you build it the way I design it. Well, Parkinson kept after him and said, you know, there needs to be a ramp. There needs to be a ramp. Think about if we bring in a circus, an elephant is not going to fit on the elevator. And Max actually gave in, and one of the last things that he did, and one of the changes that was allowed, was the installing of the ramps inside. And that enabled the assembly hall to get the circus and a number of things like that in the early years that they probably would not have had access to. And I think that was one of the things that, in a lot of ways was overlooked. It was Tom Parkinson's vision that allowed that to come to pass.
That's exactly what I was going to say, was Tom Parkinson being a huge circus fan, and how that was, I guess, you know, a challenge right away to bring in and act like the circus. Danny in Urbana has a call on line one. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm a big fan of the building, and I'm pleased that, you know, renovations are being made to make it go for another 50 years. But I'm curious about the thinking about the location of the luxury boxes. In general, the building doesn't suffer from overcapacity. You know, historically, there have been lots of sellouts in that building, in contrast to the football stadium, which probably did have excess capacity when they downsized it to create luxury boxes. But they're downsizing the capacity to create luxury boxes, and they're locating them down in the lower levels. And already now, when you look at some basketball games, A section is underfilled, which is the seats that correlate to big donors. Why are you converting prime seating to the luxury boxes? Why don't you call them sky boxes and put them up around the rim? And then no one cares whether or not those people actually attend. It seems like there's something very sort of that arena has been a sort of people's arena. And I think you're changing the dynamic of that a great deal with the decision to locate the luxury boxes down low, because too often now you see that those seats are already vacant. So I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Okay, a very good question. What we're looking at doing is, since it is a multi-purpose facility, we do a little bit of everything. I've mentioned that a couple of times. Is we've got this theater configuration, and it faces west. The whole concept of redoing the bowl, adding different seats, and adding more of the fan amenities of restrooms and concessions and elevators, and that's one of the biggest issues, too, is getting elevators in the building, is all centered around that fan experience. What we want to do is keep the theater, the west quadrant, going to the west side. That's very, very important for us, for our smaller shows, our Broadway shows, and those that we're going to have maybe, you know, anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 people in. We'll put them in that Star Theater configuration. So any adapting to the bowl when it comes to suites and clubs are going to be done on the east side. So that would be behind the curtains. It would not be affecting the Star Theater configuration at all. So where those are going, or basically as you currently know where B section is, that's where the clubs and suites are going to go. And there's a very limited amount that's going in there anyway, because we want to preserve the size of the facility. We still want to be a large facility, because for the big shows and for big basketball games, we need that. We need those seating capacities. So it's going to go right into that B-level area. It's not going low. It's going into the B side section of it. And it's purely you know, it's a fan amenity. There is a demand for it like every other facility. If you take a look at, we've been to many different facilities, the Kohl Center, you know, take a look at the Schottenstein, take a look at the Bryce Jordan Center over in Penn State, and then obviously take a look at what's going on in Indy, Chicago, and St. Louis, or even in University of Missouri. They've got suites as well, but they don't overpower. What we're looking at is a configuration that doesn't overpower the arena. So there'll be very limited amount of suites that go up. I think we're talking, you know, 12 seats that go on the east side. And that's going to be purely a financial decision to help fund the building, because obviously you'll be able to get a good amount of funding off of those once you sell those, to be able to, very similar to what they did at the stadium, you know, it's a financial picture to be able to fund the operation or to fund the renovation. Is going to, a lot of it's coming from those extra revenue streams.
Thanks so much for the call. We'd love to hear from you. We've got a few minutes left discussing Assembly Hall this morning and Fred Croner's book, A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall. We're talking with Fred Croner and Kevin Yelstad about the facility that celebrated its 50th anniversary just a couple of weeks ago. 333-9455. We're outside Champaign-Urbana, 800-222-9455. I wonder if we could just touch on the construction again. You know, there were, what, how many panes of glass? 700 panes of glass imported from England for this thing. And there's some really, out of all the pictures that I was most struck by, I think the construction ones were just the most interesting. Because, Fred, as they pointed out, there wasn't a really good way to install these glass panes.
Well, no, they had to be creative in terms of what they were going to do, because, you know, it wasn't a straight shot up and down. So, I mean, they had to essentially build a scaffolding so that, you know, that they could get the glass up at the top and get that installed properly. So, I mean, there are a lot of challenges along the way that and then, you know, in terms of also, you know, like you say, they ordered the glass, they had it imported, and, you know, they had to account for possible breakage or repair. So, I mean, they wound up ordering more than they actually needed. In fact, I think then some of the panes of glass were later used in other buildings when, because I think they had very, very little breakage. Maybe one pane of glass total is all they lost, you know, as they were working on the assembly hall.
We had a comment on, someone emailed in. Michael says that he participated as a high school student in the state science fair that was held in the assembly hall in the spring of 63, or mid-May, they estimated. The Space Age facility made quite an impression on us all. So we're talking about Assembly Hall for just a few more minutes. You know, the construction phase was interesting, too, because they had to build this scaffold or structure in the middle of it to get the whole roof put together and then tear it down.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, you saw pictures of, you know, they were actually driving vehicles in and out of the Assembly Hall, you know, during the early part of the construction phase. And I think, you know, if you haven't seen a building that size, that magnitude, come up, which I wasn't lucky enough to see, but by looking at the pictures, I mean, you really kind of get a good feel of everything that took place and just, you know, how demanding of a project this was from start to finish.
We've got a call. Louise from Champaign has a question. Go ahead.
I had a couple of them. I'm so old that I was here when it was built, and one of my sons was a student, and he nicknamed it the bouncing bivalve. I thought you might enjoy that, because, of course, it looked like a clam. That was his point. And also, a couple of things that were done there before the Krannert Center was built. I'm sure you don't remember, but we do. We saw the New York Philharmonic Orchestra there, and we also saw the great Judith Anderson play Medea in the assembly hall.
Any response, either guests? Are we going? We predating you two.
We're bouncing back there a little bit.
Oh, I think so. Right, that was a long time ago. Anyway, it's a wonderful building, and it's been a great asset to the community.
Louise, thanks so much for the call. We talked a bit early in the show about Maxwell Avranovitz, and you know, a lot of people talk about Joyce of Royer, who goes back earlier 1900s, about his the architect's contributions to this area. But as we mentioned, Avranovitz figured prominently in the U of I campus. He not only designed Assembly Hall, but the Krannert Center and Hillel Foundation.
Absolutely, and I think he took pride in coming back here. I mean, this was where, you know, he did his undergraduate work. I mean, he was a student here, and I think he took pride in coming back here and you know, leaving his footprint on Champaign-Urbana with, you know, buildings that had really stood the test of time. I mean, you look at them now, you know, they were probably ahead of their time, you know, when they were built, and you know, still very functional and still very sound.
Talking about Assembly Hall with just a couple of minutes left with Fred Croner and Kevin Yilstead. Kevin, there's a whole couple of chapters dedicated here to when the IHSA high school tournaments were here. And, of course, they still have wrestling here, but they had the basketball tournament for IHSA boys and girls. Of course, those moved the boys tournament moved to Peoria some time ago. Would this be at all in the purview of the, I don't know how long the contract goes on in Peoria, but at all something that you're thinking of here, trying to make an effort to bring back to Champaign-Urbana?
Exactly. It's still a priority on our radar screen is to go after that. And the last, just to touch upon that a little bit, we have submitted offers the last a couple of go-rounds because they're basically five-year contracts set up with IHSA. And we've had great success with wrestling and continue to showcase the university and the community with those 30, 35,000 fans that come in. But we do want to chase basketball as well. And I think we'll have a very good shot once this renovation gets taken place, because it will be a marquee facility once it is all said and done. It's going to be beautiful.
Got to wrap this up. Kevin, being the director for so long, you have one personal favorite memory, a show, something that was hosted there?
Oh, my goodness. We have had so many great basketball games and so many great shows. It's hard to pin it down, but we continue to make memories, and that's we just had a great weekend just a couple days ago with Winter Jam with 15,000 people here. So it continues to go on. There's too many of them to nail it down to a handful, that's for sure.
Want to thank both our guests today. Fred Croner, he's the author, co-author of A Saucer Coming to Rest, A Half Century of the Assembly Hall. The book just came out. Also, Kevin Yilstead, he's served as director of Assembly Hall since 1997. Thanks to both of you so much for joining us and making do on the phone in this inclement weather day.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Other members of our focus team are Pam Dempsey and Kimberly Cronick. Jason Croft was our technical director and handled your calls. I'm Jeff Bossert. Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's show on our website. You can go to it at will.illinois.edu/focus. We're likely the first result of your search engine, also under Will Focus. Tomorrow on the show, Jim Meadows returns to the host chair. His guest will be terrorism expert Martha Crenshaw from Stanford University. Professor Crenshaw is visiting the U of I tomorrow, and she'll discuss global terrorism and how concerns have changed in the last decade. We'll also talk about the use of drones in the U.S. military. Again, that's at 10 a.m. tomorrow on tomorrow's show. Taking us out right now is one more memory of Assembly Hall. This is from Chief Alina Wick's Last Dance.
The last dance of the Chief, and Lawrence Ada, a little twist at
yep,
the end.
Came back out, didn't he?
And we didn't want to interrupt it because of the emotion of the moment, but he turned around, came back to midcourt, and then faced all four sides of the court in a kind of a final salute, if you will, and honoring the crowd and the tradition.
He's all spirit now. He's gone as far as his ability to come out there in person, but his spirit will live on for a long time.
Again, one more memory from the Assembly Hall. Again, I want to thank our two guests, Fred Croner and Kevin Yilstead, talking about Assembly Hall. I'm Jeff Bossert. This is Focus.